I'd like to call the Transportation Finance Committee to order, please. And the clerk will note the roll, or do you want to call the roll? No. The clerk will note the roll. And just for starters, I know many of us have gone through the process. There's a couple of different committees. But again, to help identify each other, if you could just, with a short statement, say who you are, maybe who you represent, and for the benefit of the committee. I appreciate that. The chair would appreciate it, too. Probably Representative Holberg. Would you start?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Mary Liz Holberg. I represent most of Lakeville.
Doug Magnus. I represent the southwest corner of the state.
Representative Michael Nelson. I represent the southern half of Brooklyn Park.
Representative Gary Newton. I represent Coon Rapids and one precinct in Andover.
Representative Connie Becky, I represent District 33B, which is all the little towns around Lake Minnetonka.
Mr. Chair, Bobby Champion, I represent the southern part of North Minneapolis, the North Loop, and half of downtown Minneapolis.
My name is Susie Maher, and a week ago yesterday, I celebrated my 28th year with the legislature. I'm thrilled to be here working with the chairman and also with Representative Kuna.
My name is Abby Mann. I'm the administrator for this committee and also the Transportation Policy Committee with Representative Winston.
I'm Matt Burris with Health Research, which is one of the nonpartisan agencies that are offices in the House that does drafting and supports the work of the committee and individual members.
I'm Corinne Sewers. I'm from House Fiscal, and we're also a nonpartisan office, and I'm also here to support the committee like Matt.
I'm Bill Morgan. I represent parts of Burnsville and Savage in the South Metro.
I'm Marcia Swales, representing Woodbury and the community of Landfall.
I'm Andy Welty, State Representative for District 30B, and that encompasses the counties of Olmsted and Wabasha.
Frank Hornstein from District 60B, which is the southwest part of the city of Minneapolis.
Representative Peggy Scott, I represent Andover and Ham Lake.
Dan Peterson, I represent Sauk Rapids, Chartel, Holyfield, Rice, kind of central Minnesota, just north of St. Cloud.
Good afternoon, I'm Melissa Hortman. I represent parts of Brooklyn Park and Coon Rapids.
I'm Sandy Mason, and I represent 38A, which is the western portion of Egan and the eastern portion of Burnsville.
I'm Dan Kane. I'm DFL Caucus Research.
I think we have someone else that came in.
Representative Mike Beard from Shakopee Prior Lake, District 35A. And I think I'm the ranking Republican.
That's great. You mean that in senior? And how do you mean that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Randy Demmer. I came in with Mike, with Representative Beard, and so he is ranking, I can tell you that, in addition to being the ranking member, lead member. I'm from Hayfield, which is down west of Rochester. I represent Dodge County and western and northern Olmsted County, part of the city of Rochester on the north side, starting my fourth term here in the legislature and my first term in transportation finance. I'm looking forward to learning a lot, Mr. Chair, and so thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Roger Reinert. I am from Duluth. I represent the central and western part of the city of Duluth.
Thank you. And I'm Representative Bernie Leader, and I come from way northwestern Minnesota. Basically, it's close to the Dakota border and the Canadian border. That's the easiest way to say it. And I chair this committee with Representative Frank Hornstein. We have the policy and the finance divisions. And I think for the members should be recognized, too, that Representative Holberg previously had chaired when we were in the minority. You're the only other chair. Representative Magnus was your lead at that time, and Representative Beard is the lead now. So, but one thing we have... Who?
Pages.
Oh, the pages. Well, I was going to get those. But I better... So I get the right names. Peter Grafton, is that correct? If you want to say something, Peter?
Peter Grafton from the United States.
Where are you from, Peter?
Born in St. Paul.
And the tally?
Yes, my name is Vitaly Giron. This is my first year as a page. I am a page for the Education and Policy and Action Committee. And I'm born in Bulgaria. I live in St. Paul.
I thought that was very interesting. That's why I had to say where they're from. Because we really appreciate it. It's good to have you. One thing we have orders to do, each committee is supposed to do it, and I better do it because it's just like if you're going to church. It says right here, the House requests that all wireless communications devices be turned off during hearings. The devices interfere with the audio in the room and the official audio recording of the meeting. And all committees have been instructed to read that, and that doesn't mean just turn off the sound, it means turn off your cell phone, period. So, we've done that, so I'll get checked out okay. We just want to do some housekeeping things. Basically, the first thing I'd like to say, you know, we're the last committee that meets during the day, and I don't think anybody's too happy about running overtime. It would be a policy we hope to start on time and quit early, and I'd like to do that if we can, and we'll work towards that goal, and I think it'll work out pretty good. One of the things that we should do, I think many of you may not be aware exactly what the function of this committee is. You know, when we talk about the policy committee, which Representative Weinstein has, you can assume the word policy, that encumbers just about anything. But when we're in the finance division, we've got kind of some split things. We split some of our finance, if you want to call it authority, with another committee, and that deals with the Department of Public Safety. So I'll just, for the committee's benefit, I'm just going to go through what we call our accounts. In other words, the accounts which we're responsible for the oversight of their finance, basically, if you want to talk about their budget. And in the transportation part, we have a multimodal systems, which are really the aeronautics. We deal with aeronautics, we deal with transit, we deal with freight, we deal with rail, and we deal with ports. Now, ports is kind of an odd thing for many of you, but the ports that we deal with are river ports and actually a lake port, Duluth's Lake. We have five ports, or basically six, but St. Paul, Minneapolis are considered one. Duluth, Red Wing, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Winona, and Savage. Now, they all have port facilities which are funded to some degree by the state. We do put some monies in it just about every budget session. We also have the state roads, which is the trunk highways, NDOT people. We have the local roads, which is a jurisdiction through MnDOT, the county state aid highway portion, but we also indirectly could deal with county systems. That mostly would be policy, not finance. We also have general support and services. Those are functions of MnDOT, basically, and of public safety. We also have the Metropolitan Council Transit Operations, and in that, indirectly, it comes through Frank's committee, the Metropolitan Transit portion, and the Metropolitan Council. We don't deal with the Metropolitan Council, is it with another committee? That's with the government, what's the government committee? The name of it, Frank?
Local government.
Local government. I don't know if it was local or not, I've forgotten. We also deal with the Public Safety Department, and that we deal with their administrative services, the capital security. The capital security are the people that take care of the governor and also in the tunnels and at the capital. Indirectly, they're state troopers, but they come through capital security. Capital security are not state troopers to the degree. State troopers, there's a difference between capital security and state troopers. Capital security are not law enforcement people. They can't arrest, my understanding. That's right, correct me, let them hold it. But the troopers can, and they can do something. But capital security is a security function separate from the state patrol. We also have pipeline services, and that deals with the major pipelines that are constructed throughout the state and metro area, you know, gasoline and any pipeline. Then we have the state patrol. That's totally in our jurisdiction. I think it's 560 some officers. And then we deal with traffic safety. So basically, Other than that, we have what they call some contingency accounts in MnDOT, but that's really the accounts that we'll be dealing with in finance all the way through, and I think it may come as a surprise to a lot of them. You really don't know what it is. I never thought of it in that respect. We used to have more accounts than we have now, but it's still, those are the budget items we'll be dealing with. And I think this year, I'm not aware of anybody coming in with a big funding bill. At least they haven't talked to any of us. I don't think there'll be any big funding packages that we'll be fighting about, so it might be basically an overlook. We'll be overlooking budgets and going through a lot of those things and oversight and not overlook. You also have in your packet, if you look in the red portion, is a red portion in there where it said save? Rather than going through all the committee rules, I think we've got just about the same committee rules in every committee, and I know many of you are the same people that are on Representative Hornstein's committee. We basically have the same rules as far as amendments go. We certainly don't want to be hard-nosed on amendments. Generally, if you have an amendment, and it's a large amendment, it's a good idea to have it in ahead of time. You know, small amendments we recognize would be changed, you know, can come up during the discussion of the bill, and we won't have any problem there. And I think we don't really have a problem at all. One of the big things that always causes a problem is what they call a delete-all amendment, and I think there's some effort this year probably in the rules. My understanding that there's going to be some kind of guidance as far as delete-all amendments. And for you that are new and don't know what a delete-all amendment is, a lot of times a person will draft a bill so you can get a number and get it in the hopper. In other words, when it comes up then and when it comes up for hearing, you just get the a whole new bill, basically, delete all, they call it, and you substitute that for the original bill you filed. Generally, it's practically the same, but there are a lot of small problems that come with it. And usually, if you have a delete all, it would be a good idea to have it at the initial committee, because once you go through the process with another committee and come with a delete all, then it's a real problem. That's what happened in the last session. You could go through two, three committees and come to the finance committee, and all of a sudden there'd be a whole delete-all, and you had a whole new bill. And that really kind of defeats the purpose of going through the process with a bill. And the same thing on the floor. So usually there would be a delete-all sometimes on the floor when it comes to vote on the floor, and that makes it a little difficult. So I think they were going to see some guidance when they pick up the rules on the use of delete all. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that's going to happen. Heavy, do I miss anything? Sue? How about the nonpartisan staff here? Anything missed? Okay. Unless there are any questions from the members? Oh, Terry, we have a new member came in, too. He didn't introduce himself. Would you mention who you are?
Oh, sure.
Without a big spiel? I mean, not the big.
I represent Nicholas County, not the Good County, for my second time on the
That's the one, right. So, and actually, we do have a lot of people that are involved with, in the area of transportation. Representative Beard filled in today, actually, in airports and aviation, and Terry filled in today, and I think a lot of times who is... somebody's going on ports. We didn't have anybody in ports this year. I think the guy's gone, isn't he? Magnus takes care of, I don't know what he took care of, but he did do something.
I could do the ports, Mr. Chairman, whatever you want me to do.
We used to have kind of subcommittees on that, and basically we've encumbered it all the way through. Or usually had a lead person on it, so. But again, that's something we deal with.
If
there aren't any questions, today we thought we'd fill out some of the time with the committee to start getting into the functions of the departments, and basically we're going to oversee in a sense, or not the budget yet, because the budget hasn't come out. You know, we'll be getting budget documents, but we have part of the state aid division. The state aid division is a part that deals with county state aid highways, with basically the counties and municipalities, actually even cities over 5,000. the Department of Transportation itself, they deal with trunk highways and the other systems. And I'm saying something that sounds rather simple, but we have some new members, and it's very confusing unless they understand that there's a difference. A road is not a road, or a street is not a street, because you look at it, it is, but there's a difference in how they how they're funded and how there's a jurisdiction over them. So that's why, at least I point that out. And we're going to get into the state aid portion, which deals with, again, county state aid highways and local, not local roads and streets, but the bridges and the highways, and indirectly with township roads, and that's a different level, but they don't have jurisdiction over them. But we do funnel money through that system, through the state aid system. Is Rick Jonas in the audience? I didn't see him. Okay. Yeah. We have a person from the Assistant State Aid Engineers going to make a presentation. If you would tell us, Rick, what you're going to tell us about. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rick Jonas, and I am the Assistant Division Director for MnDOT in the Local Roads Division. And I was asked to come today and give you an overview of our division and what we do working with counties and cities. And so I'm really prepared to respond to any questions that you might have, but I'll start by giving you an overview and see if there's anything in particular you'd like to know about our programs. But there are 87 counties, as you know, and within those counties there are slightly more than 30,000 of their roads, 30,000 miles of their roads, are designated state aid routes. They're an integrated sub-network of the trunk highway system, and they tie together significant traffic generators throughout the state. There are 144 cities. We just had a new one declared here in the last couple of weeks, the city of Wyoming. We're now at 144 cities. And they share, or they have between themselves nearly 3,000 miles of city, municipal state aid streets. Then there's 700.
Would you tell them what the cities, why it's a city, what you're speaking about?
Okay. Mr. Chair, the definition of a municipal state aid community is a city that has more than 5,000 population. And every year that number is adjusted by the state demographer based on population estimates due to building permits and annexations influencing his estimate and changing, and then adjusted at the annual, or the census, when the official census is done every 10 years. So that leaves about 700 cities that are under 5,000 population, and state aid roads do run to and through those communities too. And those mileages are made part of the county state aid system, and we sub-allocate a portion of the county's money that we give them every year specifically to be spent in those small cities. We also administer the 5% that comes off the top of the entire highway user tax distribution fund, and a portion of that goes for the town road account, for the town bridge account, and for what is commonly called the turnback account, but the proper name for that is the flexible account. And so we administer those accounts too, so in that way we work with the townships and get involved with them. So those are the programs and the communities that we work with. Moving into a little bit more detail with the counties, we give them just the amount of money that ends up going to the counties is just slightly less than $400 million per year, and we give most of that money right to them for their construction and maintenance of their system, and then they combine that with their own local money and put together their own local programs. Anything that they intend to do on the state aid system, we require them to submit plans to us, and we review their plans against standards, and so a portion of our office's responsibility is to review their designs and construction. And the same is true with the cities, too. We also manage for them research programs and help them do joint projects among themselves. Right now, on the county system, 50% of their system is considered to be poor, according to the collective inventory that they turn into us, which means the last time it was regraded with construction equipment, scrapers and stuff, redigging the road up and putting compacted modern soil construction into the roadbed, is more than 50 years ago. And that's how we've been keeping track of the condition of their roads, and the number of poor roads has been increasing by the definition every year because based on the depreciation schedule, the reinvestment that they should be making in their roads, they're only making about half of that reinvestment. So tracking that by age, but we've been working with them now with their administration account money to start measuring with testing equipment the smoothness and the strength of their roads so they can actually put that data in pavement management systems and answer the question that just because a road is old doesn't mean it's not adequately serving the traffic that it's being subjected to and which roads would be better to invest in. The type of testing that would help them in the software and the training, that's something that we're working with them now and have been for the last 3 years, and we're just getting into the thick of things right now. So that's an exciting new area for us to be working with the counties on. We also administer their federal programs too. They compete through the ATP process for federal funds, and on average they get $100 million per year, sometimes as much as $150 million per year. It does fluctuate since it's competitive, but $100 million is probably a good running average. And so the environmental reviews and the plan reviews are either done or coordinated through our office for those programs too. We administer the local road improvement program and the bridge bonding program. The cities are
before you went to see, I just really made a big boo-boo. I forgot something. My vice chair is Bobby Joe Champion sitting here, and I mentioned everybody else, and I wasn't even thinking of that. So he's the vice chair, and he's probably going to be taking over quite a bit of the time when I'm not here, if I'm not here. So, it just hit me, you know, the light came on. Excuse me, Rick, so if you could continue.
The cities, how they operate their systems, they are required to turn in an inventory of their street systems to us every year and count up how many blocks of street they have and convert that to miles, and then tell us how many county state highways are in their community and how many trunk highways in there, and make a calculation to reflect that, because those are roads that are receiving a share of the highway user tax distribution fund. And then the remaining local dollars that are the responsibility, or local streets that are the responsibility of the city, they can designate up to 20% of that street mileage and put that on the state aid system. And we work with them to make sure that they do pick the collector routes that are running through their communities and not the purely residential, local, dead-end type roads. I know, and they're working with you the last few years, that still leaves them the other 80% to work with off of the property tax and special assessment method, and they've been furnishing a lot of information to our office and I think to you about the difficulty they have financing the remainder of their system. But speaking only of the state aid portions of their roads, they're very similar to the counties in the fact that their system is aging and they are not keeping up with their rate of construction. Two or three years ago, the counties voted to increase the amount of money. The state aid off division is funded by, we take 1.5% of the state aid money that comes through. The highway user tax distribution fund is split 62-29-9. 62% goes to the trunk highway, 29% goes to the counties, 9% goes to the cities. So the 29% and the 9%, that's what we administer and give to the locals. And we keep, in the case of the counties, 2% back to run our office. And that is comprised of the entire budget to fund our office. And we get no other administration dollars for any of the bonding programs or for the federal monies that we have helped them administer. And about 3 years ago, the counties had voted to increase that money that they gave to us from what had been historical 1.5% to 2% to allow us to not staff up and gear up and increase our administration activities and number of people that we have contact, because we just tried to provide oversight to the county. They have the staff and they do the work, and we want to pass through as much of the money as we can. But to fund things like this testing program that I was talking about earlier, that they like for that. And then this last year, there's been a large call for repeat bridge inspections, specialized bridge inspections focusing on the gusset plate and other things. And we have responded to that, the county engineer's request, collectively by administering contracts statewide, hiring consultants, sending them out to the counties and to the cities to do the work. And we've been using our administration money to do that. And because of that increased activity, the cities have reached a point where their administration account is broke. And
excuse me, I have a question. Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Chair. Just to clarify, so when municipalities designate their state aid roads, it goes through your office. There's some sort of review and accountability on that. Yes?
Representative, Mr. Chair, you're asking if we review which roads they designate as state aid routes a city?
Yep.
Yes, we do.
Okay. How do you handle municipalities that choose to redirect municipal state aid towards things other than streets, skywalks, tunnels, things like that? Does that come through your office as well?
Mr. Chair, yes, we review all of their expenditures of money to make sure that they're state aid eligible. And the cities and counties have jointly met over the years and produced a set of rules. And in there, it identifies eligible items. And things that are eligible, and things that are not eligible. And we make every effort to oversee that.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. Thank you.
Actually, in a sense, too, you can't change the designation that easily. I mean, just from year to year, you understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you want to proceed.
Okay, so I think I was saying that the cities are falling behind, too, on their designation or their condition of their state aid streets in their communities. The number of miles that are poor, about one-third of their roads are considered to be in poor condition, which, according to their definition, is more than 40 years of age since there was last a regrading investment made on those. And they should be regrading 87 miles a year to be meeting the depreciation curve, and they're only doing an average of 50, so they're falling further and further behind. But they would like to get involved, perhaps, in an integrated pavement management system, too, and be able to better report and manage their streets and post load limits on them where necessary, and communicate with people that this is the proper time to invest and help them with their special assessment hearings. And so this year, I know MnDOT has got in its housekeeping bill, but we've talked to the cities, League of Cities and the city engineers, and they're still contributing to our city administration account at the 1.5% rate that was historical. And we have a bill in this year now to increase it to 2% so that they can do a few more of those things working with our office and working as a collective unit of municipalities. We just this week completed the draft of the apportionment. We have to convert from fiscal year to calendar year because municipalities work on a calendar year. So this week we're in the process of taking the money that has came into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund since last July, at least the last 5 months, and converting it over into a calendar year and giving out to every county and city its share of state aid money for the coming year. And it's about 6% increase over what we had for them last year, in part due to the constitutional amendment and in part due to the bill that was passed by this legislature last year. I know that was less than what was everybody had thought during the session last year and what we had been working with during the summer based on the February forecast, but That's a matter of economic reasons there. So those amounts were sent out to counties and cities today, and we'll start actually issuing the dollars behind that probably next week.
So the question, Representative Scott?
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I know this is really, I'm backing up here, but you mentioned the ATP process. What
yes.
does ATP stand for?
ATP stands for Area Transportation Partnership, and the state is broken up into units of counties that sit down together, and they're assigned based on a formula that was developed jointly with locals and MnDOT. Each ATP gets an assigned percentage of the federal dollars that come into Minnesota to be spent in their area, and they get to receive applications for the federal funding and prioritize those. So they're prioritized local. It's quite a process, and it works really well as far as allowing a chance for there to be a local input into the prioritization of the federal funds.
Thank you.
I think it'd be good to say too, Mr. Jonas, that actually you do not do any designating. It's all local, determines which projects should be built and everything else. You don't, your division doesn't say they have to build this road or this street or bridge or anything. You just handle it when they bring it in.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly right. And so, you know, like last year's legislative session, there was discussion about the weight limits to 10 tons, and there was concern about fracture critical bridges, and a lot of people that didn't understand that specific matter you referred to thought that the state aid office could just start redirecting the construction dollars to focus on targeted needs. Mm-hmm. But we can't do that. We have to work with the local governments through education and opportunity to base up their own priorities for any of their local dollars and their state aid dollars. They pick their projects, and our only role on things is to make sure that what they're spending on is a proper selected route, and that the costs that they're proposing to spend on that route are in fact eligible activities.
Representative Beers had a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jonas, on these ATPs, I'm thinking of my own county of Scott, which is in the Met Council's jurisdiction. Does the Met Council act as the ATP in this area then, in the metro area, or is can the suburban counties be in with some other counties?
Mr. Jonas?
Representative, Mr. Chair, the Met Council does act as the ATP in this area.
That's what I thought. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Seifert, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Jonas, can you tell the committee how the STIP, State Transportation Improvement Program, how the ATP interfaces in with the STIP? Or am I screwed up on that?
No, Mr. Chair, Representative, you are correct. I'm not the expert on that. There may be MnDOT people here that are more familiar with that, but I can tell you from working with the local side of things, the ATPs take applications from MnDOT and local agencies in their jurisdiction and put these projects, and they rank them according to regional significance and technical score, how bad and how cost effective is the expense and how much benefit will their region receive. And they set these regional priorities, and they prioritize the projects, and then these projects come together to St. Paul, and the work from all the ATPs is then blended by one of our MnDOT offices, and we put together a master list, and then wait to see what the money from Washington looks like. And once we find the amount of funding, a line is drawn, and if you're either above or below the line, and then the communication goes back to the ATPs. And then during the course of the year, adjustments take place. I'm not sure if that's what you want me to get into, but nothing ever goes exactly as planned. And so projects that are anticipated, this program is 3 years, actually 4 years in advance to give people time to be working on their projects. And a project that gets put into this TIP document, statewide improvement plan document, maybe they find that they run into some environmental or some right-of-way issue that's not going to allow them to build a project in the year they initially planned. Well, then working with the ATPs and other ATPs and trying to keep in mind fairness at so many different levels. Counties want to have a be treated fairly across the state and the trunk highways and the cities, geographical fairness and types of work and enhancement projects and all this. So as adjustments are needed, then ATPs are called in to amend the program and work with this office to make sure that if a project is flipped, because we are under some federal that we need to spend so much per year, the money that we receive, it needs to be obligated, or it could be lost to the state. So you always have a backup plan, and there's people that are assigned to make sure that the program is managed.
Representative,
this is maybe one follow-up question as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Jones. Could you talk a little bit about the federal appropriations bill, which bill we're in, which year of the bill that we're in, the federal appropriations bill? I think the last one was the T21. And is that expended now or obligated, and are we in a new one now?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think I'm going to say that I'm not sure on that. I mean, we're in fiscal year 09, but we're at the end of the T21 bill, and the new one is not here yet. And so I believe that there's some sort of a continuing resolution, but I'm not the person to really answer your question about how the federal program for 09 and 10 is going to be managed.
And just and the reason I asked, obviously transportation funding becomes very complicated here, and the feds, you know, obligate dollars to our state. How we determine how we're going to get those dollars spent depends on how the appropriations go. We don't know what the appropriations is going to be, and that becomes problematic. So when we're as a state trying to obligate those funds, it becomes tenuous.
Mr. Jonas, that'd be pretty much in the trunk highway area. Is that correct? Basically, that wouldn't be so much in the state aid division that you'd be concerned about that.
Well, locals receive about 30% of the federal dollars that come into the program, Mr. Chair. So we do monitor the program and try to keep the locals informed as to how things are going. But we know that the federal trust fund is under financial stress, and then the bill that has we've been operating on is expiring, and there's a new bill moving forward. So I think people are making the assumption that the same amount that we got in 08 and 09 is going to continue for a while, but that's strictly an assumption. And locals do ask us about that, because there are programs that are in the 10, 11, and 12 years for federal programming that the locals have put in there into that three-year document, and they want to know if they're going to be able to deliver, if the assumptions that went into that document are in fact still valid, or whether things are changing, and then the federal government is not going to be able to meet the obligations of the current TIP. So we are interested to that degree, but we have an inside office that works on that.
I was wondering, were you talking about stimulus funds, or weren't you represent Severson or not? The regular funds, okay. I have a question, not a question, but also you talked about the ATPs, and I think we've got a lot of rural members here. The ATP structure in the rural area is a little bit different than the metro area. Are the ATPs working through the Regional Development Commissions, the RDCs, or are you working through the construction districts? Is there differences throughout the state as far as that? Between how it goes, would you explain that?
Sure, Mr. Chair. The makeup of an ATP, every ATP in the state probably has a completely different makeup from other ATPs. There are ATPs that have fewer than 10 members on them, and there are ATPs that may have as many as 50 people sitting on them in some areas, and representing walkers, snowmobilers, tribes, cities. In some cases, they're run through the MnDOT district. In some groups, in some areas of the state, they're run through the Regional Development Council. The variation is great, which I would turn that into a positive. That's one thing that most people are proud of, and Minnesota is setting an example for that. These ATPs, they decide for themselves how many members and what constituency base they want to have, and how they want to rank theirs, what goes into making a reasonable significant score and a technical significant score. They determine that. They're assigned the amount of money for their area, but then they pretty well have a lot of discretion as to who can be a voting member on their ETPs and how they do their project selections. So there are no two that are alike.
I don't know how long a presentation you have, but do you have a question, Reston Hofer?
I do, Mr. Chair, and not so much that I'm assuming that you can. One that I think you can probably answer off the top of the head, but a couple that I'm just looking for updated information. First, has the screening board made any changes to the standards in the last year as far as the formula for needs or anything, or any changes made in that group?
Chair, Representative, the Municipal Screening Board has not made any changes in the last year. The County Screening Board made one fairly significant change. It may not be what you were thinking of, but to the county engineers, they used to have built into the needs formula a penalty for anybody who took a road that was not meeting our current width standards and therefore was safety deficient, and made the decision to use state aid dollars to deal with the fact that it was potholed and rough and rutted, and put that pavement down on there using state aid dollars. In theory, if there was enough money, it would be a lot more appropriate to rebuild the road first, put the width in there, and get through safety standards. But if the county board is directing you that we don't have that kind of money and we need to deal with the surface, the public is concerned about the ride. So the screening board penalized anybody who made those decisions to help give them incentive to do the right thing of rebuilding the road. And more counties were finding themselves getting penalized, and the screening board kind of reversed things that all of a sudden, you know, we, in this economic time, we shouldn't be penalizing for this, so they removed the penalty.
All right, thank you. And then, Mr. Chair and Mr. Jonas, what I'm looking for is, in the past, you have run models that have shown the percentage of needs that are funded, and that generally we had a range somewhere around 35% for Hennepin County, and we were pushing up against 200% of needs numbers being funded. So, I mean, not by tomorrow or anything, but in the next couple of weeks, once you get your head above water, sounds like you just sent the numbers out, so you're probably pretty busy. But if you could do that run again and show where our funding is on CASAS as a percentage of need for each county, I'd appreciate seeing that again. And then the other thing that I am curious about is, because there was maintenance of effort language put in the bill that passed that put the inflation factor into the base fund, I'm not using the right term, but the old formula, that there's an inflation factor built into that, and we've seen, in fact, reduced car sales, et cetera. So what I'm trying to figure out, or what I would like to know, is how much was raised on the new money, the new revenue sources, that being the surcharges and the increased tab fees and the increased gas revenue, and then in a dollar amount or percentage, how much of that was slid back into the old formula distribution because of the maintenance or the inflation language that was put in. So in other words, what percentage of the new money actually went to the old formula because of the inflation factor?
Can you get that, Rick?
Mr. Chair, I can send, or I actually have an abbreviated form that's with me right now.
What was that again?
I have some of the numbers with me right now, Mr. Chair, if you'd like me to just try to answer the question now.
Okay. How long will it take you? I mean, what do you have in the other presentation, because you can come back too.
I was going to talk about bridges a little bit and explain what we do with the bridge bonding money. I have that.
Why don't you work it out and see if you can get it within your time frame?
And Mr. Chair, I'm happy to wait. I think if we could have a handout that would clearly show for the committee, there's lots of new members here, and but I think that we need to know, you know, that inflation factor was built in with an assumption that we were going to see continual growth. you know, funding sources and given in the economy, et cetera, I'm assuming that if there is growth, that it was not up to the rate of inflation, and in fact, new money then was put into the old formula because that maintenance of effort, and maybe that's not a first day presentation, and would help to have some handouts on it.
You'll get that for us. If you'll get that for us, that's okay. Yeah. Okay, if you would continue, please.
Okay. Mr. Chair, before I leave this page here, I mean, I just mentioned to you that the so-called old money, which last year was $363 million, and we distributed $338 million this year under that old money. There was really no inflation adjustment on there, and the revenue streams to the different contributing sources that go into the highway user distribution tax all suffered from, you know, less gas and cars being purchased, that the old money took that drop. And so we actually have several counties that are receiving less money this year than they received last year, which is a big concern that the counties, I mean, they're just finding that out today, and we're already receiving phone calls. How can this be? So I thought maybe it was important to answer that much of your question right now.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I guess what I'm talking about is the part of the, now I shut my page, so I don't have it open, I can't read it to you exactly, but where it talked about the consumer price index inflation factor, I believe it's the tab fees collected. So that's what I'm interested in.
I think we probably confused a lot of people here. Because we're talking about the old formula and the new formula, we haven't hit that at all, and maybe if you want to comment, or I should comment quickly. Prior to this last session, all the county state aid highway monies were distributed by a formula, what they call the old formula, and there's been a real, one of the reasons probably we've not seen an increase in funding for the last 20 years, because there's this competition between highway and transit and metro and rural. And finally, last year, the counties themselves and the county engineers agreed on a change in the formula for any new monies that came in after this bill was passed. So the monies that came in after, this last year, now 2008, are going to be distributed on a different basis than the previous distribution, but only for the new monies. And Rick, if you want to get into that a little bit, I think we probably confused a lot of people here wondering what we're talking about. So technically, the combination of both the old and new monies, old formula, new formula, each county gets that total. It's not a separate one for every county, but each county gets the combination of both in their final distribution of money. Do you want to comment a little on that just to clear it up?
Mr. Chair, I'll be glad to provide just a quick overview on that. This applies only to the counties now, not to the cities. The cities, there was no changes made. But last year, the legislative session, at the urging of AMC and the counties, the formula was changed for how the money was distributed between counties. And there was discussion about metro area and greater Minnesota and what percent of CASA money, county city money, should go to each. The Representative Holbrook had mentioned that growing areas are suffering more for needs for new construction, where other areas are more in a preservation mode. And so a new formula was put in place last year that would be more sensitive to providing funds to growing areas and more highly populated areas. The best intentions of that work over the last 3 years that the counties worked together and stood unanimously in favor of, and there was anticipation of new money and everybody receiving some new money, and on average people receiving perhaps as much as an average of 15% new money. This economic disturbance that we're in right now kind of knocked everything, you know, so it's not happening the way people had hoped for. The new money is going to these targeted growth areas more. It's true,
There's about $40 million of new money that was created, and the existing $338 million that we would have received had there not been a new formula is going as it did in the past. But not everybody shared equally in that new money, and with the old money going backwards.
When you say that, no. They shared because of the formula, not because it was arbitrary or you're taking advantage of somebody. And that's what we want to be careful of here, because there's changes due to the formula, but it's not due to anybody individual action, whether it's rural or metro. It's
correct.
Because of the way the formula works.
Correct. Correct. So, yeah, Mr. Chair, every county got more money based on that bill that last year, and is receiving money through the new formula. But the amount of money that the funds were thought to bring in this year haven't materialized. And so people that put together their budgets last July, even, because that's when counties work on their budgets for this coming calendar year, are finding out that the distribution that we're going to be giving out later this month are 10% less than what they had hoped last July. And it's easy to blame the change in the CASA formula or other things, but that's not the source. The source is economic problems, and hopefully that ship rights itself here soon.
Representative Beard had a question.
Yeah, related to this, Mr. Chairman, Rick, there's actually been two pots of new money, and I just want to be clear what we're talking about. We talk about new money on the CASA formula. A couple of election cycles ago, the citizens voted to start moving the rest of the vehicle sales tax over. Did that go into the old portion of the formula or new? Because I think 60% of that went to the highway user trust fund, didn't it? And then the second part of the question is, and of course we had the veto override last year with the gas tax, license tab fee increases, and where does that fit in the picture? Is that all considered new? Can you clarify that for us?
Mr. Jonas?
Mr. Chair, I don't think I can completely explain that to your satisfaction today. But the money that is generated through all those funds goes into the statewide highway user tax distribution fund. And then there are definitions in the bill language that defines what's old money and new money. And it really only has meaning within the flexible account. There's specific uses that are defined for how the new money that gets into the flexible account is to be used, and in the CASA formula later on. So 29% of the new money is governed under a different CASA formula than the other old money was. But the calculations for what is old and new money are made way back at the MnDOT level, where the statewide pot is put together. I've seen those calculations, but did not make those calculations. At some point in time, we're just assigned two numbers. Here's the old money and the new money, and then we do the distribution between the counties and the cities. That's the job of our division.
Mr. Chairman, this does sound incredibly complicated, but it might be helpful for us to know which new money goes into which. The motor vehicle sales tax, is that new or is that old new? You know, you follow me, and it might be beyond the scope of this meeting, but at some point it would be good to know that.
Indeed, Mr. Jonas, we'll have Corinne or Matt, they can explain that to they
right now.
They've got the numbers.
Mr. Chair, members, the MDES dollars are considered new money. It's anything above the 2007 percentages that were the 2007 percentages were before the constitutional amendment, so those would be considered new revenue.
Okay, thank you.
You have further questions, Representative?
That's very helpful to know that that's new. Thanks.
And we use those acronyms again, MVEST, just for the new members in case they don't know what it means. And I think they might. MVEST is Motor Vehicle Sales Excise Tax. That's what you get when you buy a new car or car, you pay a sales tax. So sometimes, Rick, we're using numbers that we probably should be aware of. We don't confuse people too much. for the time being. They'll know it next meeting, though.
Okay.
You can go on, or do you have further?
Would you like to talk about bridge bonding, or would you like to save that topic?
How much time have you got on that, Walker?
It could be 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, go ahead.
I do have a handout on that one. If I'm not sure if it got out to you.
The pages, if you grab that one.
I will start, first of all, by thanking the committee for its role in providing for our local bridge bonding program last year, $50 million. And to date, we have spent $18 million of the $50 million, and that has helped replace 112 bridges throughout the state on local roads. And we gave priority to bridges that were fracture critical, load restricted, and then the federal funded bridges. I think a lot was accomplished. It was a little bit of a change in our activity, where normally we have taken bridges, and at the bridge plans that came into our office, we funded them on a first come first served list, because bridge planning is a 5-year journey from the time that the counties or cities decide that they want to replace a bridge. And they pass a resolution, they have an inspection with the DSAE, they get onto a master list, they start their environmental review, and everything just kind of keeps building. It's about a 5-year journey. So when the plan gets to our office, historically we funded these things on a first-come, first-served basis. Last year we deviated from that, sensing the legislative intent and knowing the public's concern that we spend as much of that money on fracture-critical and load-restricted bridges as possible. So we did that, and to date, 40 bridges were replaced with bridge bonding funds. 14 of those were fracture critical, 3 of which were on township roads, and that's where $16 million of our bridge bonding went. We currently have, and if you remember last year, AMC and the League and the Transportation Alliance were asking for fairly large amounts of bridge bonding money, and local agencies saw fit that they should gear up and put a lot of bridge plans on the shelf. So we have on our shelves right now 112 bridge plans requesting $18 million of bridge bonding money. Bridge bonding is never used 100%, or almost never used 100% to replace a bridge. They're always used in conjunction with other funds to leverage and get a lot of things done. But they are very effective at leveraging other funds and getting things done. So that includes federal funds, state aid funds, the town bridge account, and other local dollars. So that's what's on our shelf waiting. we have the rest of the $50 million for this summer set aside. We have $7 million to match the federal funds that we are anticipating receiving this summer, and providing the 20% match for those communities that are fortunate enough to be receiving federal bridge replacement dollars. And we are in anticipation of some fracture critical bridges being submitted to our office that would move directly to the top of the stack. So we have $2 million set aside for it. And we also have $25 million set aside for the Lowry Avenue Bridge. Those are the three numbers that are in the center of the page that I just handed out. That's the program that is set up to be delivered this summer. That's a goal. At the bottom of the page is a response to a request that Representative Leader made of our office. If we were only able to receive a modest amount of bridge bonding this money year, or if we were able to receive a modest amount of money, what would make sense to us? And so we took a look at the fact that we changed our method of picking projects out last year, and not first come, first serve, and we noticed that we have 19 bridges that the plans came into our office in 2007, needing $3 million of bridge bonding money. So they've been laying there for quite some time. And that's not normal, and some of these projects are, there's public expectations, and there's maybe stage constructions that are going along with those projects. So that would be something that we would like to see move, if at all possible. The 2010 federal program would need $5.7 million of matching money.
and historically that's been provided by bridge bonding. And then we have a joint project with North Dakota between the two counties up in Polk County, and the cost for that bridge is $4 million for the Minnesota share, or the Polk County share. So there's $12.7 million. It's kind of a natural breaking point. If you go to the middle of the page there where you see jumping out 112 bridges requesting $18 million, that's the plans that we have laying in our office. And if we would look at those and try to prioritize within that, there's that natural breaking point at $12.7 million where if there was any way that that could be received, that's how that amount of money would be spent. That was an effort to answer your question on that, Representative Leader. We did a lot of inspection work this last year in response to both the governor and the legislature asking that fracture critical bridges and gusset bus plates be inspected. Every local bridge that was fracture critical and every bridge that had gusset plates that were questionable that is scheduled to remain in place more than a few years were carefully inspected for safety using specialized consultants. So we oversaw all that work too. So it was a big year. The locals cooperated with us really well in the way we changed our way of doing business. I think a lot was accomplished, and I thank you for that.
Mr. Jones, what's an average? There's smaller bridges, I know, but what's the average cost? Roughly $150,000? Can you say just off the cuff, is that the way it works about? Or what? Is it more than that?
Mr. Chair, yes, $150,000, $200,000 is probably an average. There are a lot of bridges that cost $500,000 to $1 million, but there are an awful lot of what are called culverts. Bridge bonding reaches down to bridges that are only 10 foot in length, and now there are culverts that are 10 foot in length, and they're safer and easier and faster to install, and so counties and townships are choosing to do that. So we've used bridge bonding on a lot of projects that are replacing structures for $100,000 plus or minus, and so many of those that brings the average down.
Are there any questions? Heather, do you have further testimony or not testimony? No, basically. If not, well, we certainly appreciate you coming in, and I'm sure we'll have you back. I think we do getting back into it.
Thank you. Anything else we'll talk about?
No? If there's... The other thing is we have a joint committee meeting coming up. When is that happening? In the end of the month, we have a joint committee meeting with the Senate on the 29th of January. That isn't now, but you should be aware of it. And watch your emails, because I think the time change is different than it in the evening. And at that time, we'll have Congressman Oberstar making a presentation. We're meeting jointly with the Senate. Wait, do we have two meetings or what? We have another one. That's right. Next Thursday, we have a joint meeting with local government committee in the House on the Delta Airlines and Northwest situation. They're going to review that with us, and that's next Thursday. And that's also, check your, I think we have a different time, so be aware of that. Oh, it's our time, our committee time, okay. So if you watch that, that'll keep you. And one thing, if you're going to go kind of batty watching your emails, their instructions are to the committees that every time there's something going on, you're going to get a lot of them and says canceled. You wonder, there's never a committee meeting set up in the first place, maybe, but it's going to come to you as canceled. So you see a lot of canceled on your emails now. That was instructions that we have. So don't let it throw you any. But, so if there isn't any further comments, the meeting's adjourned, and thank you very much. I'd like to call the Transportation Finance Committee to order, please. And the clerk will note the roll. Or do you want to call the roll? No. The clerk will note the roll. And just for starters, I know many of us have gone through the process. There's a couple of different committees. But again, to help identify each other, if you could just, with a short statement, say who you are, maybe who you represent, and for the benefit of the committee. I appreciate that. The chair would appreciate it, too. Probably Representative Holberg, would you start?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Mary Liz Holberg. I represent most of Lakeville.
Bernie?
Fred Magnus. I represent the southwest corner of the state.
Representative Michael Nelson. I represent the southern half of Brooklyn Park.
Representative Gary Newton. I represent Coon Rapids and one precinct in Andover.
Representative Connie Becky. I represent District 33B, which is all the little towns around Lake Minnetonka.
Mr. Chair, Bobby Champion. I represent the southern part of North Minneapolis, the North Loop, and half of downtown Minneapolis.
My name is Susie Maher, and a week ago yesterday, I celebrated my 28th year with the legislature. I'm thrilled to be here working with the chairman and also with Representative Kuna.
My name is Abby Mann. I'm the administrator for this committee and also the Transportation Policy Committee with Representative Kuna.
I'm Matt Burris, the Public Research, which is one of the nonpartisan agencies that are offices in the House that does drafting and supports the work of the committee and individual members.
I'm Corinne Sewers. I'm from House Fiscal, and we're also a nonpartisan office, and I'm also here to support the committee like Matt.
I'm Bill Morgan. I represent parts of Burnsville and Savage in the South Metro.
I'm Marcia Swales, representing Woodbury and the community of Landfall.
I'm Andy Welty, State Representative for District 30B, and that encompasses the counties of Olmsted and Wabasha.
Frank Hornstein from District 60B, which is the southwest part of the city of Minneapolis.
Representative Peggy Scott, I represent Andover and Ham Lake.
Dan Searson, I represent Stock Rapids Cartel, Holy Ford Rice, kind of central Minnesota, just north of St. Cloud.
Good afternoon, I'm Melissa Hortman. I represent parts of Brooklyn Park and Coon Rapids.
I'm Sandy Mason, and I represent 38A, which is the western portion of Eagan and the eastern portion of Burnsville.
I'm Dan Kane. I'm DFL Caucus Research.
I think we have someone else that came in.
Representative Mike Beard from Shakopee Prior Lake, District 35A. And I think I'm the ranking Republican.
That's great. You mean that in senior? How do you mean that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Randy Demmer. I came in with Mike, with Representative Beard, and so he is ranking, I can tell you that, in addition to being the ranking member, lead member. I'm from Hayfield, which is down west of Rochester. I represent Dodge County and western and northern Olmsted County, part of the city of Rochester on the north side. Starting my fourth term here in the legislature, and my first term in transportation finance. I'm looking forward to learning a lot, Mr. Chair, and so thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Roger Reinert. I am from Duluth. I represent the central and western part of the city of Duluth.
Thank you. I'm Representative Bernie Leader, and I come from way northwestern Minnesota, basically close to the Dakota border and the Canadian border. That's the easiest way to say it. And I chair this committee with Representative Frank Hornstein. We have the policy and the finance division. And I think for the members should be recognized, too, that Representative Holberg previously had chaired when we were in the minority. You're the only other chair. Representative Magnus was your lead at that time, and Representative Beard is the lead now. So, but one thing we... Who?
Pages.
Oh, the pages. Well, I was going to get those. But I better... So I get the right names. Peter Grafton, is that correct? If you wouldn't say something, Peter.
Peter Grafton, I'm a second year education.
Where are you from, Peter?
I'm born in St. Paul. Okay.
And Vitaly?
Yes, my name is Vitaly Giron. This is my first year as a page. I am a page for the Transportation Policy and Finance Committee. And I was born in Bulgaria, but then in St. Paul.
I thought that was very interesting. That's why I had him say where they're from, because we really appreciate it. It's good to have him. One thing we have orders to do, each committee is supposed to do it, and I better do it, because it's just like if you're going to church. It says right here, the House requests that all wireless communications devices be turned off during hearings. The devices interfere with the audio in the room and the official audio recording of the meeting. And all committees have been instructed to read that, and that doesn't mean just turn off the sound, it means turn off your cell phone, period. So we've done that, so I'll get checked out okay. We just want to do some housekeeping things. Basically, the first thing I'd like to say, you know, we're the last committee that meets during the day, and I don't think anybody's too happy about running overtime. It would be a policy we hope to start on time and quit early, and I'd like to do that if we can, and we'll work towards that goal, and I think it'll work out pretty good. One of the things that we should do, I think many of you may not be aware exactly what the function of this committee is. You know, when we talk about the policy committee, which Representative Weinstein has, you can assume the word policy, that encompasses just about anything. But when we're in the finance division, we've got kind of some split things. We split some of our finance, you want to call it authority, with another committee, and that deals with the Department of Public Safety. So I'll just, for the committee's benefit, I'm just going to go through what we call our accounts. In other words, the accounts which we're responsible for the oversight of their finance, basically, if you want to talk about their budget. And in the transportation part, we have a multimodal system, which are really the aeronautics. We deal with aeronautics, we deal with transit, we deal with freight, we deal with rail, and we deal with ports. Now, ports is kind of an odd thing for many of you, but the ports that we deal with are river ports and actually a lake port, Duluth's Lake. We have five ports, or basically six, but St. Paul, Minneapolis are considered one. Duluth, Red Wing, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Winona, and Savage. Now, they all have port facilities which are funded to some degree by the state. We do put some monies in it just about every budget session. We also have the state roads, which is the Trunk Highway PennDOT people. We have the local roads, which is a jurisdiction through MnDOT, the county state aid highway portion, but we also indirectly could deal with county systems. That mostly would be policy, not finance. We also have general support and services. Those are functions of MnDOT, basically, and of public safety. We also have the Metropolitan Council Transit Operations, and in that, indirectly, it comes through Finance Committee, the Metropolitan Transit portion, and the Metropolitan Council. We don't deal with the Metropolitan Council, is it with another committee? That's with the government, local, what's the government committee? The name of it, Frank?
Local government.
Local government. That's, I don't know if it was local or not, I've forgotten. We also deal with the Public Safety Department, and that, we deal with their administrative services, the capital security. The capital security are the people that take care of the governor and also in the tunnels and at the capital. Indirectly, they're state troopers, but they come through capital security. Capital security are not state troopers to the degree. State troopers, there's a difference between capital security and state troopers. Capital security are not law enforcement people. They can't arrest, my understanding. That correct me, let them hold it. But the troopers can, and they can do something. But capital security is a security function separate from the state patrol. We also have pipeline services, and that deals with the major pipelines that are constructed throughout the state and metro area, you know, gasoline and any pipeline. And then we have the state patrol. That's totally in our jurisdiction. I think it's 560-some officers. And then we deal with traffic safety. So basically, other than that, we have what they call some contingency accounts in MnDOT. But that's really the accounts that we'll be dealing with in finance all the way through. And I think it may come as a surprise to a lot of them. You really don't know what it is. I never thought of it in that respect. We used to have more accounts than we have now, but it's still, those are the budget items we'll be dealing with. And I think this year, I'm not aware of anybody coming in with a big funding bill. At least they haven't talked to any of us. I don't think there'll be any big funding packages that we'll be fighting about, so it might be basically an overlook. We'll be overlooking budgets and going through a lot of those things and oversight, and not overlook. You also have in your packet, if you look in the red portion, is the red portion in there where it says save? Rather than going through all the committee rules, I think we've got just about the same committee rules in every committee, and I know many of you are the same people that are on Representative Hornstein's committee. We basically have the same rules as far as amendments go. We certainly don't want to be hard-nosed on amendments. Generally, if you have an amendment, and it's a large amendment, it's a good idea to have it in ahead of time. You know, small amendments we recognize will be changed, you know, can come up during the discussion of the bill, and we won't have any problem there. And I think we don't really have a problem at all. One of the big things that always causes a problem is what they call a delete all amendment, and I think there's some effort this year probably in the rules. My understanding that there's going to be some kind of guidance as far as delete all amendments. And for you that are new and don't know what a delete all amendment is, a lot of times a person will draft a bill so you can get a number and get it in the hopper. In other words, when it comes up then and when it comes up for hearing, you just get the a whole new bill, basically, delete all, they call it, and you substitute that for the original bill you filed. Generally, it's practically the same, but there are a lot of small problems that come with it. And usually, if you have a delete all, it would be a good idea to have it at the initial committee, because once you go through the process with another committee and come with a delete all, then it's a real problem. That's what happened in the last session. You could go through two, three committees and come to the finance committee, and all of a sudden there'd be a whole delete all, and you had a whole new bill. And that really kind of defeats the purpose of going through the process with a bill. And the same thing on the floor. So usually there would be a delete all sometimes on the floor when it comes to vote on the floor, and that makes it a little difficult. So I think that we're going to see some guidance when they pick up the rules on the use of delete all. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that's going to happen. Heavy, do I miss anything? Sue? How about the nonpartisan staff here? Anything missed? Okay. Unless there are any questions from the members? Oh, Terry, we have a new member came in, too. He didn't introduce himself. Would you mention who you are?
Oh, sure.
Without a big spiel? I mean, not the
I represent Nicholas County and Sidgwick County. This is my second time on the committee.
That's the one, right. So, and actually, we do have a lot of people that are involved with, in the area of transportation. Representative Beard filled in today, actually, in airports and aviation, and Terry filled in today. And I think a lot of times, somebody's going on ports. We didn't have anybody in ports this year. I think the guy's gone, isn't he? Magnus takes care of, I don't know what he took care of, but he did do something.
I could do the force, Mr. Chairman, whatever you want me to do.
We used to have kind of subcommittees on that, and basically we've encumbered it all the way through. I usually had a lead person on it, so. But again, that's something we deal with. So, if there are any questions, today we thought we'd fill out some of the time at the committee, to start getting into the functions of the departments. And basically, we're going to oversee, in a sense, or not the budget yet, because the budget hasn't come out. You know, we'll be getting budget documents, but we have part of the state aid division. The state aid division is a part that deals with county state aid highways, with basically the counties and municipalities, actually even cities over 5,000. The Department of Transportation itself, they deal with trunk highways and the other systems. And I'm saying something that sounds rather simple, but we have some new members, and it's very confusing unless they understand that there's a difference. A road is not a road, or a street is not a street because you look at it. It is, but there's a difference in how they're funded and how there's a jurisdiction over them. So that's the reason I point that out. And we're going to get into the state aid portion, which deals with, again, county state aid highways and local, not local roads and streets, but the bridges and the highways. And indirectly with township roads, and that's a different level, but they don't have jurisdiction over them. But we do funnel money through that system, through the state aid system. Is Rick Jonas in the audience? I didn't see him. Okay. Yeah. We have a person from the Assistant State Aid Engineers going to make a presentation. If you would tell us, Rick, what you're going to tell us about. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Rick Jonas, and I am the Assistant Division Director for MnDOT in the local roads division, and I was asked to come today and give you an overview of our division and what we do working with counties and cities. And so I'm really prepared to respond to any questions that you might have, but I'll start by giving you an overview and see if there's anything in particular you'd like to know about our programs. But there are 87 counties, as you know, and within those counties there are slightly more than 30,000 of their roads, 30,000 miles of their roads, are designated state aid routes. They're an integrated sub-network of the trunk highway system, and they tie together significant traffic generators throughout the state. There are 144 cities. We just had a new one declared here in the last couple of weeks, the city of Wyoming. We now are at 144 cities, and they share, or they have between themselves nearly 3,000 miles of city municipal state aid streets. Then there's 700.
Would you tell them what the city, why it's a city, what you're speaking about?
Okay. Mr. Chair, the definition of a municipal state aid community is a city that has more than 5,000 population. And every year that number is adjusted by the state demographer based on population estimates due to building permits and annexations influencing his estimate and changing and then adjusted at the annual, or the census, when the official census is done every 10 years. So that leaves about 700 cities that are under 5,000 population, and state aid roads do run to and through those communities too. And those mileages are made part of the county state aid system, and we sub-allocate a portion of the county's money that we give them every year specifically to be spent in those small cities. We also administer the 5% that comes off the top of the entire highway user tax distribution fund, and a portion of that goes for the town road account, for the town bridge account, and for what is commonly called the turnback account, but the proper name for that is the flexible account. And so we administer those accounts too, so in that way we work with the townships and get involved with them. So those are the programs and the communities that we work with. Moving into a little bit more detail with the counties, we give them just the amount of money that ends up going to the counties is just slightly less than $400 million per year. And we give most of that money right to them for their construction and maintenance of their system. And then they combine that with their own local money and put together their own local programs. Anything that they intend to do on the state aid system, we require them to submit plans to us, and we review their plans against standards. And so a portion of our office's responsibility is to review their designs and construction. And the same is true with the cities, too. We also manage for them research programs and help them do joint projects among themselves. Right now, on the county system, 50% of their system is considered to be poor, according to the collective inventory that they turn into us, which means the last time it was regraded with construction equipment, scrapers and stuff, redigging the road up and putting compacted modern soil construction into the roadbed, is more than 50 years ago. And that's how we've been keeping track of the condition of their roads, and the number of poor roads has been increasing by the definition every year, because based on a depreciation schedule, the reinvestment that they should be making in their roads, they're only making about half of that reinvestment. So tracking that by age, but we've been working with them now with their administration account money to start measuring with testing equipment the smoothness
and the strength of their roads so they can actually put that data in pavement management systems and answer the question that just because a road is old doesn't mean it's not adequately serving the traffic that it's being subjected to, and which roads would be better to invest in. The type of testing that would help them in the software and the training, that's something that we're working with them now and have been for the last 3 years, and we're just getting into the thick of things right now. So that's an exciting new area for us to be working with the counties on. We also administer their federal programs too. They compete through the ATP process for federal funds, and on average they get $100 million per year, sometimes as much as $150 million per year. It does fluctuate, it's competitive, but $100 million is probably a good running average. And so the environmental reviews and the plan reviews are either done or coordinated through our office for those programs too. We administer the local road improvement program and the bridge bonding program. The cities are
before you went to see, I just really made a big boo-boo. I forgot something. My vice chair is Bobby Joe Champion sitting here, and I mentioned everybody else, and I wasn't even thinking of that. So he's the vice chair, and he's probably going to be taking over quite a bit of the time when I'm not here, if I'm not here. So, it just hit me, you know, the light came on. Excuse me, Rick, so if you could continue.
The cities, how they operate their systems, they are required to turn in an inventory of their street system to us every year and count up how many blocks of street they have and convert that to miles, and then tell us how many county, state highways are in their community and how many trunk highways in there, and make a calculation to reflect that, because those are roads that are receiving a share of the highway user tax distribution fund. And then the remaining local dollars that are responsibility, or local streets that are responsibility of the city, they can designate up to 20% of that street mileage and put that on the state aid system. And we work with them to make sure that they do pick the collector routes that are running through their communities and not the purely residential local dead end type roads. I know, and they're working with you the last few years. That still leaves them the other 80% to work with off of the property tax and special assessment method, and they've been furnishing a lot of information to our office and I think to you about the difficulty they have financing the remainder of their system. But speaking only of the state aid portions of their roads, they're very similar to the counties and the fact that their system is aging and they are not keeping up with their rate of construction. Two or three years ago, the counties voted to increase the amount of money. The state aid off division is funded by, we take 1.5% of the state aid money that comes through. The highway user tax distribution fund is split 62-29-9. 62% goes to the trunk highway, 29% goes to the counties, 9% goes to the cities. So the 29% and the 9%, that's what we administer and give to the locals. And we keep, in the case of the counties, 2% back to run our office. And that is comprises the entire budget to fund our office. And we get no other administration dollars for any of the bonding programs or for the federal monies that we have helped them administer. And about 3 years ago, the counties had voted to increase that money that they gave to us from what had been historical 1.5% to 2% to allow us to not staff up and gear up and increase our administration activities and number of people that we have contact, because we just tried to provide oversight to the counties. They have the staff and they do the work, and we want to pass through as much of the money as we can. But to fund things like this testing program that I was talking about earlier, that they like for that. And then this last year, there's been a large call for repeat bridge inspections, specialized bridge inspections focusing on the gusset plate and other things. And we have responded to that, the county engineer's request, collectively by administering contracts statewide, hiring consultants sending them out to the counties and to the cities to do the work, and we've been using our administration money to do that. And because of that increased activity, the cities have reached a point where their administration account is broke. And
excuse me, I have a question. Representative Reinhart.
Thank you, Chair. Just to clarify, so when municipalities designate their state aid roads, it goes through your office. There's some sort of review and accountability on that. Yes?
Representative, Mr. Chair, you're asking if we review which roads they designate as state aid routes a city?
Yep.
Yes, we do.
Okay. How do you handle municipalities that choose to redirect municipal state aid towards things other than streets, skywalks, tunnels, things like that? Does that come through your office as well?
Mr. Chair, yes, we review all of their expenditures of money to make sure that they're state aid eligible. And the cities and counties have jointly met over the years and produced a set of rules. And in there, it identifies eligible items. And things that are eligible, and things that are not eligible. And we make every effort to oversee that.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, thank you.
Actually, in a sense, too, you can't change the designation that easily. I mean, just from year to year. You understand that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you want to proceed.
Okay, so I think I was saying that the cities are falling behind, too, on their designation or their condition of their state aid streets in their communities. The number of miles that are poor, about one-third of their roads are considered to be in poor condition, which, according to their definition, is more than 40 years of age since there was last a regrading investment made on those. And they should be regrading 87 miles a year to be meeting the depreciation curve, and they're only doing an average of 50, so they're falling further and further behind. But they would like to get involved, perhaps, in an integrated pavement management system, too, and be able to better report and manage their streets and post load limits on them where necessary, and communicate with people that this is the proper time to invest and help them with their special assessment hearings. And so this year, MnDOT has got in its housekeeping bill, but we've talked to the cities, legal cities, and the city engineers, and they're still contributing to our state aid administration account at the 1.5% rate that was historical. We have a bill in this year now to increase it to 2% so that they can do a few more of those things working with our office and working as a collective unit of municipalities. We just this week completed the draft of the apportionments. We have to convert from fiscal year to calendar year because municipalities work on a calendar year. So this week we're in the process of taking the money that has came into the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund since last July, at least the last 5 months, and converting it over into a calendar year and giving out to every county and city its share of state aid money for the coming year. And it's about 6% increase over what we had for them last year, in part due to the constitutional amendment and in part due to the bill that was passed by this legislature last year. I know that was less than what was everybody had thought during the session last year and what we had been working with during the summer based on the February forecast, but that's a matter of economic reasons there. So those amounts were sent out to counties and cities today, and we'll start actually issuing the dollars behind that probably next week.
So the question, Representative Scott?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I know this is really, I'm backing up here, but you mentioned the ATP process. What
yes.
does ATP stand for?
ATP stands for Area Transportation Partnership, and the state is broken up into units of counties that sit down together, and they're assigned based on a formula that was developed jointly with locals and MnDOT.
each ATP gets an assigned percentage of the federal dollars that come into Minnesota to be spent in their area, and they get to receive applications for the federal funding and prioritize those. So they're prioritized local. It's quite a process, and it works really well as far as allowing a chance for there to be a local input into the prioritization of the federal funds.
Thank you.
I think it'd be good to say too, Mr. Jonas, that actually you do not do any designating. It's all local. It determines which projects should be built and everything else. You don't. Your division doesn't say they have to build this road or this street or bridge or anything. You just handle it when they bring it in.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly right. And so, you know, like last year's legislative session, there was discussion about the weight limits to 10 tons, and there was concern about fracture-critical bridges, and a lot of people that didn't understand that specific matter you referred to thought that the state aid office could just start redirecting the construction dollars to focus on targeted needs. Mm-hmm. But we can't do that. We have to work with the local governments through education and opportunity but they set their own priorities for any of their local dollars and their state aid dollars. They pick their projects, and our only role on things is to make sure that what they're spending on is a proper selected route, and that the costs that they're proposing to spend on that route are, in fact, eligible activities.
Representative Beers had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jonas, on these ATPs, I'm thinking of my own county of Scott, which is in the Met Council's jurisdiction. Does the Met Council act as the ATP in this area then, in the metro area, or can the suburban counties be in with some other counties?
Mr. Jonas?
Representative, Mr. Chair, yeah, the Met Council does act as the ATP in this area.
That's what I thought. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Severs?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Jonas, can you tell the committee how the STIP, State Transportation Improvement Program, how the ATP interfaces in with the STIP? Or am I screwed up on that?
No, you're a good question. Mr. Chair, Representative, you are correct. I'm not the expert on that. There may be MnDOT people here that are more familiar with that, but I can tell you from working with the local side of things, the ATPs take applications from MnDOT and local agencies in their jurisdiction and put these projects, and they rank them according to regional significance and technical score, how bad and how cost effective is the expense and how much benefit will their region receive, and they set these regional priorities and they prioritize the projects, and then these projects come together to St. Paul, and the work from all the ATPs is then blended by one of our MnDOT offices, and we put together a master list, and then wait to see what the money from Washington looks like, and once we find the amount of funding, a line is drawn, and if you're either above or below the line, and then the communication goes back to the ATPs. And then during the course of the year, adjustments take place. I'm not sure if that's what you want me to get into, but nothing ever goes exactly as planned, and so projects that are anticipated, this program is 3 years, actually 4 years in advance to give people time to be working on their projects, and a project that gets put into this TIP document, statewide improvement plan document, maybe they find that they run into some environmental or some right-of-way issue that's not going to allow them to build a project in the year they initially planned. Well, then working with the ATPs and other ATPs and trying to keep in mind fairness at so many different levels, counties want to be treated fairly across the state and the trunk highways and the cities, geographical fairness and types of work and enhancement projects and all this. So as adjustments are needed, then ATPs are called in to amend the program and work with this office to make sure that if a project is slipped, because we are under some federal that we need to spend so much per year, the money that we receive, it needs to be obligated, or it could be lost to the state. So you always have a backup plan, and there's people that are assigned to make sure that the program is managed.
Representative.
Maybe one follow-up question as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Jones. Could you talk a little bit about the federal appropriations bill, which bill we're in, which year of the bill that we're in, the federal appropriations bill? I think the last one was the T21. And is that expended now or obligated, and are we in a new one now?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think I'm going to say that I'm not sure on that. I mean, we're in fiscal year 09, but we're at the end of the T21 bill, and the new one is not here yet. And so I believe that there's some sort of a continuing resolution, but I'm not the person to really answer your question about how the federal program for 09 and 10 is going to be managed.
And just and the reason I obviously transportation funding becomes very complicated here, and the feds, you know, obligate dollars to our state. How we determine how we're going to get those dollars spent depends on how the appropriations go. We don't know what the appropriations is going to be, and that becomes problematic. So when we're as a state trying to obligate those funds, it becomes tenuous.
Mr. Jonas, that'd be pretty much in the trunk highway area. Is that correct? Basically, that wouldn't be so much in the state aid division that you'd be concerned about that.
Well, locals receive about 30% of the federal dollars that come into the program, Mr. Chair. So we do monitor the program and try to keep the locals informed as to how things are going. But we know that the federal trust fund is under financial stress, and then the bill that has we've been operating on is expiring, and a new bill moving forward. So I think people are making the assumption that the same amount that we got in 08 and 09 is going to continue for a while, but that's strictly an assumption. And locals do ask us about that, because there are programs that are in the 10, 11, and 12 years for federal programming that the locals have put in there into that three-year document. And they want to know if they're going to be able to deliver, if the assumptions that went into that document are in fact still valid, or whether things are changing, and then the federal government is not going to be able to meet the obligations of the current TIP. So we are interested to that degree, but we have them in that office that works on that.
I was wondering, were you talking about stimulus funds, or weren't you represent Severson or not? The regular funds, okay. I have a question, not a question, but also you talked about the APPs, and I think we've got a lot of rural members here. The APP structure in a rural area is a little bit different than the metro area. Are the APPs working through the regional development commissions, the RDCs, or are you working through the construction districts? Is there differences throughout the state as far as that, between how it goes? Would you explain that?
Sure, Mr. Chair. The makeup of an ATP, every ATP in the state probably has a completely different makeup from other ATPs. There are ATPs that have fewer than 10 members on them, and there are ATPs that may have as many as 50 people sitting on them in some areas, and representing walkers, snowmobilers, tribes, cities. In some cases, they're run through the MnDOT district, and some groups in some areas of the state they're run through the regional development council. The variation is great, which I would turn that into a positive. That's one thing that most people are proud of, and Minnesota is setting an example for that. These ATPs, they decide for themselves how many members and what constituency base they want to have, and how they want to rank theirs, what goes into making a regional significant score and a technical significant score. They determine that. They're assigned the amount of money for their area, but then they pretty well have a lot of discretion as to who can be a voting member on their ATPs and how they do their project selections. There are no two that are alike.
I don't know how long a presentation you have, but do you have a question, Representative Hofer?
I do, Mr. Chair, and not so much that I'm assuming that you can, one that I think you can probably answer off the top of the head, but a couple that I'm just looking for updated information. First, has the screening board made any changes to the standards in the last year as far as the formula for needs or anything? Were any changes made in that group?
Chair, Representative, the Municipal Screening Board has not made any changes in the last year. The County Screening Board made one fairly significant change. It may not be what you were thinking of, but to the county engineers, it was, they used to have built into the needs formula a penalty for anybody who took a road that was not meeting our current width standards and therefore was safety deficient, and made the decision to use state aid dollars to deal with the fact that it was potholed and rough and rutted, and put that pavement down on there using state aid dollars. And in theory, if there was enough money, it would be a lot more appropriate to rebuild the road first, put the bricks in there, and get your safety standards. But if the county board is directing you that we don't have that kind of money and we need to deal with the surface, the public is concerned about the ride. So the screening board penalized anybody who made those decisions to help give them incentive to do the right thing of rebuilding the road. And more counties were finding themselves getting penalized, and the screening board kind of reversed things that all of a sudden, you know, we, in this economic time, we shouldn't be penalizing for this, so they removed the penalty.
All right, thank you. And then, Mr. Chair and Mr. Jonas, what I'm looking for is, in the past you have run models that have shown the percentage of needs that are funded, and that generally we had a range somewhere around 35% for Hennepin County, and we were pushing up against 200% of needs numbers being funded. So, I mean, not by tomorrow or anything, but in the next couple of weeks, once you get your head above water, sounds like you just sent the numbers out, so you're probably pretty busy. But if you could do that run again and show where our funding is on CASAB as a percentage of need for each county, I'd appreciate seeing that again. And then the other thing that I am curious about is, because there was maintenance of effort language put in the bill that passed that put the inflation factor into the base fund, I'm not using the right term, but the old formula, that there's an inflation factor built into that, and we've seen, in fact, reduced car sales, et cetera. So what I'm trying to figure out, or what I would like to know, is how much was raised on the new money, the new revenue sources, that being the surcharges and the increased tab fees and the increased gas revenue, and then in a dollar amount or percentage, how much of that was slid back into the old formula distribution because of the maintenance or the inflation language that was put in. So in other words, what percentage of the new money actually went to the old formula because of the inflation factor?
Can you get that, Rick?
Mr. Chair, I actually have an abbreviated form of that with me right now.
What was that again?
I have some of the numbers with me right now, Mr. Chair, if you'd like me to just try to answer the question now.
Okay. How long will it take you? I mean, what do you have in your other presentation, because you can come back, too?
I was going to talk about bridges a little bit and explain what we do with the bridge bonding money. I have that.
Why don't you work it out, see if you can get it within your time frame.
And Mr. Chair, I'm happy to wait. I think if we could have a handout that would clearly show for the committee, there's lots of new members here, and but I think that we need to know, you know, that inflation factor was built in with an assumption that we were going to see continual growth in those funding sources, and given in the economy, et cetera, I'm assuming that if there is growth, that it was not up to the rate of inflation, and in fact, new money then was put into the old formula because that maintenance of effort, and maybe that's not a first day presentation, and would help to have some handouts
you,
on it.
You'll get that for us. If you'll get that for us, that's okay? Yeah. Okay, if you would continue, please.
Okay. Mr. Chair, before I leave this page here, maybe I just mention to you that the so-called old money, which last year was $363 million, and we distributed $338 million this year under that old money. There was really no inflation adjustment on there, and the revenue streams to the different contributing sources that go into the highway user distribution tax all suffered from, you know, less gas and cars being purchased, that the old money took that drop. And so we actually have several counties that are receiving less money this year than they received last year, which is a big concern that the counties, I mean, they're just finding that out today, and we're already receiving phone calls, how can this be? So I thought maybe it was important to answer that much of your question right now.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I guess what I'm talking about is the part of the, now I shut my page so I don't have it open, I can't read it to you exactly, but where it talked about the consumer price index inflation factor on, I believe it's the tab fees collected. So that's what I'm interested in.
I think we probably confused a lot of people here, because we're talking about the old formula and the new formula. We haven't hit that at all, and maybe if you want to comment, or I should comment quickly. Prior to this last session, all the county state aid highway monies were distributed by a formula, what they call the old formula, and it's been a real one of the reasons probably we've not seen an increase in funding for the last 20 years, because there's competition between highway and transit and metro and rural. And finally last year the counties themselves and the county engineers agreed on a change in the formula for any new monies that came in after this bill was passed. So the monies that came in after this last year, now 2008, are going to be distributed on a different basis than the previous distribution, but only for the new monies. And Rick, if you want to get into that a little bit, I think we probably confused a lot of people here when what we're talking about. So technically, the combination of both the old and new monies, old formula, new formula, each county gets that total. It's not a separate one for every county, but each county gets the combination of both in their final distribution of money. Do you want to comment a little on that just to clear it up?
Mr. Chair, I'll be glad to provide just a quick overview on that. This applies only to the counties now, not to the cities. The cities, there was no changes made. But last year, the legislative session, at the urging of AMC and the counties, the formula was changed for how the money was distributed between counties. There was discussion about metro area and greater Minnesota and what percent of CASA money, county state aid money, should go to each. The Representative Holbrook had mentioned that growing areas are suffering more for needs for new construction, where other areas are more in a preservation mode. And so a new formula was put in place last year that would be more sensitive to providing funds to growing areas and more highly populated areas. The best intentions of that work over the last 3 years that the counties worked together and stood unanimously in favor of, and there was anticipation of new money and everybody receiving some new money, and on average people receiving perhaps as much as an average of 15% new money. This economic disturbance that we're in right now kind of knocked everything, you know, so it's not happening the way people had hoped for. The new money is going to these targeted growth areas more. It's true. There's about $40 million of new money that was created, and the existing $338 million that we would have received had there not been a new formula is going as it did in the past. But not everybody shared equally in that new money, and with the old money going backwards.
When you say that, no. They shared because of the formula, not because it was arbitrary or you're taking advantage of somebody. And that's what we want to be careful of here, because there's changes due to the formula, but it's not due to anybody individual action, whether it's rural or metro. It's
correct.
Because of where the formula works.
Correct. So Yeah, Mr. Chair, every county got more money based on that bill that last year, and it's receiving money through the new formula. But the amount of money that the funds were thought to bring in this year haven't materialized, and so people that put together their budgets last July, even because they had some counties work on their budgets for this coming calendar year, are finding out that the distribution that we're going to be giving out later this month are 10% less than what they had hoped last July. And it's easy to blame the change in the CASA formula or other things, but that's not the source. The source is economic problems, and hopefully that ship rights itself here soon.
Related
to this, Mr. Chairman, Rick, there's actually been two pots of new money. I just want to be clear what we're talking about. We talk about new money on the CASA formula. A couple of election cycles ago, the citizens voted to start moving the rest of the vehicle sales tax over. Did that go into the old portion of the formula or new? Because I think 60% of that went to the highway user trust fund, didn't it? And then the second part of the question is, and of course we had the veto override last year with the gas tax, license tab fee increases, and where does that fit in the picture? Is that all considered new? Can you clarify that for us?
Mr. Jonas?
Mr. Chair, I don't think I can completely explain that to your satisfaction today. But the money that is generated through all those funds goes into the statewide highway user tax distribution fund. And then there are definitions in the bill language that defines what's old money and new money. And it really only has meaning within the flexible account. There's specific uses that are defined for how the new money that gets into the flexible account is to be used, and in the CASA formula later on. So 29% of the new money is governed under a different CASA formula than the other old money was. But the calculations for what is old and new money are made way back at the MnDOT level, where the statewide pot is put together. I've seen those calculations but did not make those calculations. At some point in time, we're just assigned two numbers. Here's the old money and the new money, and then we do the distribution between the counties and the cities. That's the job of our division.
Mr. Chairman, this does sound incredibly complicated, but it might be helpful for us to know which new money goes into which. The motor vehicle sales tax, is that new or is that old new? You know, you follow me, and it might be beyond the scope of this meeting, but at some point it would be good to know that.
Dear Mr. Jonas, we'll have Corinne or Matt can explain that because they've got the numbers.
Mr. Chair, members, the MVEST dollars are considered new money. It's anything above the 2007 percentages apart. The 2007 percentages were before the constitutional amendment, so those would be considered new revenue.
Okay, thank you.
You have further questions, Representative?
That's very helpful to know that that's new. Thanks.
And we use those acronyms again, MVEST, just for the new members in case they don't know what it means. And I think they might. MVEST is Motor Vehicle Sales Excise Tax. That's what you get when you buy a new car or car, you pay a sales tax. So sometimes, Rick, we're using numbers that we probably should be aware of. We don't confuse people for the time being. They'll know it next meeting, though.
Okay.
You can go on, or do you have further?
Would you like to talk about bridge bonding, or would you like to save that topic?
How much time you got on that, Lothar?
It could be 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, go ahead.
I do have a handout on that one. If I'm not sure if it got out to you.
Pages, if you grab that one.
I will start, first of all, by thanking the committee for its role in providing for our local bridge bonding program last year, $50 million. And to date, we have spent $18 million of the $50 million and that has helped replace 112 bridges throughout the state on local roads. And we gave priority to bridges that were fracture critical, load restricted, and then the federal funded bridges. And I think a lot was accomplished. It was a little bit of a change in our activity where normally we have taken bridges, and as the bridge plans that came into our office, we funded them on a first-come, first-served list, because bridge planning is a five-year journey from the time that the counties or cities decide that they want to replace a bridge, and they pass a resolution, they have an inspection with the DSAE, they get onto a master list, they start their environmental review, and everything just kind of keeps building. It's about a five-year journey, so when the plan gets to our office, historically, we funded these things on a first-come, first-served basis. Last year, we deviated from that, sensing the legislative intent and knowing the public's concern that we spend as much of that money on fracture-critical and load-restricted bridges as possible. So we did that. And to date, 40 bridges were replaced with bridge bonding funds. 14 of those were fracture critical, 3 of which were on township roads, and that's where $16 million of our bridge bonding went. We currently have, and if you remember last year, AMC and the League and the Transportation Alliance were asking for fairly large amounts of bridge bonding money, and local agencies saw fit that they should gear up and put a lot of bridge plans on the shelf. So we have on our shelves right now 112 bridge plans requesting $18 million of bridge bonding money. Bridge bonding is never used 100% or almost never used 100% to replace a bridge. They're always used in conjunction with other funds to leverage and get a lot of things done. But they are very effective at leveraging other funds and getting things done. So that includes federal funds, city funds, the town bridge account, and other local dollars. So that's what's on our shelf waiting. We have the rest of the $50 million for this summer set aside. We have $7 million to match the federal funds that we are anticipating receiving this summer, and providing the 20% match for those communities that are fortunate enough to be receiving federal bridge replacement dollars. And we are in anticipation of some fracture-critical bridges being submitted to our office that would move directly to the top of the stack, so we have $2 million set aside for it. And we also have $25 million set aside for the Lowry Avenue Bridge. Those are the three numbers that are in the center of the page that I just handed out. That's the program that is set up to be delivered this summer. That's a goal. At the bottom of the page is a response to a request that Representative Leader made of our office. If we were only able to receive a modest amount of bridge bonding this money year, or if we were able to receive a modest amount of money, what would make sense to us? And so we took a look at the fact that we changed our method of picking projects out last year and not first come, first serve, and we noticed that we have 19 bridges that the plans came into our office in 2007, needing $3 million of bridge funding money. So they've been laying there for quite some time, and that's not normal, and some of these projects are, there's public expectations, and there's maybe stage constructions that are going along with those projects. So that would be something that we would like to see move if at all possible. The 2010 federal program would need $5.7 million of matching money, and historically that's been provided by bridge bonding. And then we have a joint project with North Dakota between the two counties up in Polk County, and the cost for that bridge is $4 million for the Minnesota share, or the Polk County share. So there's $12.7 million. It's kind of a natural breaking point. If you go to the middle of the page there where you see jumping out 112 bridges requesting $18 million. That's the plans that we have laying in our office. And if we would look at those and try to prioritize within that, there's that natural breaking point at $12.7 million where if there was any way that could be received, that's how that amount of money would be spent.
That was an effort to answer your question on that, Representative Leader. We did a lot of inspection work this last year in response to both the governor and the legislature asking that fracture critical bridges and gusset plus plates be inspected. Every local bridge that was fracture critical and every bridge that had gusset plates that were questionable that is scheduled to be remain in place more than a few years were carefully inspected for safety using specialized consultants. So we oversaw all that work too. So it was a big year. The locals cooperated with us really well in the way we changed our way of doing business. I think a lot was accomplished, and I thank you for that.
Mr. Jones, what's an average? There's smaller bridges, I know, but what's the average cost? Roughly $150,000? Can you save us off the cuff? Is that the way it works about? Or what? Is it more than that?
Mr. Chair, yes, $150,000, $200,000 is probably an average. There are a lot of bridges that cost $500,000 to $1 million, but there are an awful lot of what are called culverts. Bridge bonding reaches down to bridges that are only 10 foot in length, and now there are culverts that are 10 foot in length, and they're safer and easier and faster to install, and so counties and townships are choosing to do that. So we've used bridge bonding on a lot of projects that are replacing structures for $100,000 plus or minus, and so many of those that brings the average down.
Are there any questions? Heather, do you have further testimony or not testimony? No, basically. If not, well, we certainly appreciate you coming in, and I'm sure we'll have you back. I think we do getting back into it.
Thank you for everything I'm supposed to talk about.
No? If there's... The other thing is we have a joint committee meeting coming up. When is that happening? In the end of the month, we have a joint committee meeting with the Senate on the 29th of January. That isn't now, but you should be aware of it. And watch your emails, because I think the time change is different than it's in the evening. And at that time, we'll have Congressman Oberstar making a presentation. We're meeting jointly with the Senate. Wait, do we have two meetings or what? We have another one? That's right. Next Thursday, we have a joint meeting with local government committee in the House on the Delta Airlines and Northwest situation. They're going to review that with us. And that's next Thursday. And that's also, check your, I think we have a different time, so be aware of that. Oh, it's our time, our committee time, okay. So if you watch that, that'll keep you. And one thing, if you're going to go kind of batty watching your emails, the instructions are to the committees that every time there's something going on, you're going to get a lot of them and says canceled. You wonder, there's never a committee meeting set up in the first place, maybe, but it's going to come to you as canceled. So you see a lot of canceled on your emails now. That was instructions that we have. So don't let it throw you any. So if there isn't any further comment, the meeting's adjourned, and thank you very much.